Before we get to this week's Survivor Feedback Show with PG Law, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, our friends over at True Car, because they've got some useful tips that you might not be aware of, like how a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean the interior of your car. You can remove excess weight from your car as well to improve its gas mileage, and you can also place your keychain remote right underneath your chin to increase its range. That's weird, but here's a tip that you might not know about as well. True Car also helps people find a used car as well. That's right. True Car isn't just for buying a new car. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll be the beneficiary of real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with True Car, you can see what other people paid, so you'll know if you're getting a good deal before you buy. And True Car users are also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with a True Car certified dealer. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, check out True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Coming live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy you knew you were waiting for. I'm Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our feedback show here for episode number 6 of Survivor Ghost Island. And boy, do we have a treat for you here today, because with me here in the studio to talk about everything going on is the great PG Law.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Very excited to have you back here in the studio. And it's been a minute, and so excited when you said that you would come back here to talk about it. We had such a fun podcast back then in Millennials versus Gen X, and excited to talk about everything here with you today. PG, how you been?
I've been fantastic. Since the last time I did that, I have moved back to LA. So I've been living back here.
Oh, I didn't know you left.
Well, yeah, I was living in San Francisco for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you were here, and now this is so fortuitous. See, I had a horrible fear that earlier today that it hit me, because do you remember the last time that you were here?
Yes, vaguely.
Yes. Well, we were talking about the second episode of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, and we talked about how it was a big blindside of Mari Takahashi, and I said, oh my God, first off, PG is going to think I just call her in anytime an Asian person gets voted off, and people are going to think I know the spoilers, and neither of those is the case. That is not true. This was a coincidence.
I was thinking that on the way over.
I felt so stupid.
This racial profiling?
I didn't know that. We how many dates did we throw around? It wasn't like PG, look, I got to be honest, I need you this day
That's true. I was actually going to do this about 2 weeks ago, but I thought I was going to be closing. No, I was out of town.
Yes. So we went back and forth on the date. So I just want to put that out of people's minds before we even get to it. So that was not even a shower thought this morning. So I don't want you to think that about me.
It's the way it always happens, man. It's like, you know, when Kellen said that her worst nightmare was going to go silent. And of course, she's going to draw the rock.
Yes, I put that thought out into the universe. Yes, because we didn't even say, like, last season when Simone got voted out, I wasn't even like, hey, Peachy, can you call in today? No, that wasn't even like a thought. That's not a thing. And it's random.
Yeah. Well, but I'm excited to talk. I'm sad that I have to talk about James being voted out.
Yes.
But, you know, it's fun. It's an interesting topic for me again whenever there's this whole issue of the
Asians or people of color
getting voted out.
Okay, so PG. Anyway, very excited to have you here. Everything's going good in your world?
Yeah. It's fantastic. I was telling you earlier, I just bought my first condo together with my sister. So I feel like I'm an adult finally.
Yes. And you and your sister get along?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we fight, of course, over certain things, but for the most part, yeah, like we're really good friends. We like all the same things, so it's easy.
Could you envision a scenario where you and your sister would be like a blood versus water pair?
We actually auditioned. We sent in a tape for it once, and they decided not. I think this was for season 30. They were thinking about doing
right before then. They like emailed everybody and like, hey, do you have a loved one you'd play with? Right.
Yeah. So we did send in a video, and they ended up not doing a blood versus water with that. I was really torn because I don't I don't know if I'd want to play with a sister. I think love. I think playing with like with a loved one has got to be the worst feeling in the world.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because it's a lot easier to play when it's kind of every man for himself. And even though you have allies, you have people that you're like, oh, man, we're this is my ride or die. We're going all the way to the end together. But at some point, you know, you may have to cut them. And you're like, yes, you know what? Ultimately, only one person can win. Right. Mm-hmm. But if it's like your sister, your husband or whoever, like, you know, Survivor can destroy relationships. And so, like, sure. You know, if you vote out your mom or something, like.
Well, that thing, I don't think that it destroyed that relationship.
No. But, I think it would also be tough for me to watch them messing up also. It would be hard for me to, you know, not be the older sister. Be like, hey, man, what are you doing? Like, mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Everyone's got to play their own game. So.
Well, I'm very excited to talk about this episode. I know that you actually binged the entire season in the last 24 hours before coming here to talk about this. So this is very, like, it's exciting to have somebody who, you know, you've seen all of this so recently and you can process it all and you're not sort of biased by sort of, you know, a talking point from a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Yeah. No, I was up till 2 a.m. cramming for this.
Good.
Just because I've been so busy and I haven't really had any time and I'm mm-hmm. not really a TV watcher anyway. It was cutting into my League of Legends time.
Yes.
My gaming time. No, it's I forget how much fun it is to watch a series, just, you know, a show like just one right after the other, right mm-hmm. after the other. And it's kind of a lot easier to get invested yes. in the characters, which I feel like I kind of really needed that because we haven't seen any huge characters really emerge yet,
mm-hmm.
I feel like.
Well, I feel like we have a lot of big personalities in this new season.
Yeah, well, so and some of them are coming out. Like, I'm like, Chris in this last episode
yes.
was amazing.
Yes.
Like, he's like a cartoon character, like, just complete caricature. I'm way into it.
Okay, so here's what I want to know from you, of course, that there was some major shouting out to Survivor China, and we got to see one of the two idols that James got blindsided out of the game, which you were an active participant in, ends up coming back into this season. What did you make of James's idol being found on Ghost Island?
Well, I loved that. It made an appearance, first of all, and I yes. made like a 2-second appearance on that episode. And I'm curious, did they have to like contact him and have him mail them back to
okay,
them or
right.
what?
But we talked about this because, I mean, they were, because he owns them, right?
Oh, yeah. He had them, he took them out of the game. You know, they were in his bag. Mm-hmm. And we talked later and he was like, I stare at them every day. They're on my mantle. like he had them propped up on his fireplace mantle.
Yeah.
You know?
So I know that they did pay people some money to get some of these artifacts back. So they must have paid James some money to get. He's like, it's the first time these idols make him money.
Right. Well, they're kind of priceless. Like, it's one of those souvenirs. Like, mm-hmm. it's so hard to part with. Like, I don't know how they talked them into giving them up.
I don't know. Well, I guess they would have talked about like, oh, no, James, we want to use the idol, but we want to use it in a season where we call you like a really dumb idiot for making a huge mistake. So can we have them? Can we have them? Because we wanted to like remind people that we've said that you were stupid.
Well, you clearly haven't lived it down yet. So we need to bring it back a second time.
Right. But in this season that Michael talked about James's getting voted out with two idols, he said that he thought that was the biggest mistake in the history of the show. And I feel like it wasn't. Or that do you feel like that it was?
No, I mean, It's not the biggest mistake. I think what happened in the season right after that
With Eric
yeah. giving up immunity, that has to be the biggest yeah. mistake ever.
Because here's the question that you can help settle this debate for me, because I feel like that, you know, James, it was at 7 and I think you could play the idols until 5. So he still had to get through one vote without an idol. So
he had 3 more tribal councils.
Right.
Use
and he had 2 idols yeah. so that he had to pick which 2 to play that. And you say, OK, well, he should have played them maybe at the odd numbers. That would he play, should have played 1 at 7 and 1 at 5. That probably would have been the better way to go. But then he still had to get through the final 4. There was still another vote that was going to happen where he had to get through and you know, he would either had to win immunity or not get voted out there, and then he would have had to win the jury vote. And do you feel like that being on that jury that he was a shoo-in to win the jury vote?
I think it depends on who he was sitting next to.
Yeah,
right. Like, and here's the thing though, like, I hadn't seen a lot of strategic gameplay from James up until then. But the thing is, if he had played the idol, that would have been something that I would have probably respected then and be like, okay, you know what? That was pretty a good move on him. And he should have done it because he's a pretty big dude. He has a decent likelihood of winning one of the individual immunities. So why not play it at the one where you don't win and then figure, well, maybe you'll win the next immunity.
And also on top of that, so everybody knew he had two. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody knew he has two, but now all of a sudden he plays one at seven, and then now there's two tribal councils, and then it's like, okay, should we go for him? Should we go for him now? Because now it's like, well, now we know there's a 50-50 chance of being able to get him that he might not play one of his idols, where it was probably a little bit more of a risk in terms of like you didn't know if he was, you know, there were three tribal councils and two idols, so I guess he had a 66% chance to get through. Right? Am I get these odds right?
Yeah, and the thing is, he knew that me and Eric's vote were live, right? We're desperate to stay in the game. So if James had come up to me and Eric at any point and been like, hey, you guys, you know what? Like, I've got the idol. This is a really good opportunity. I will vote with you two guys. I will save you two, and we will vote out Todd. Guess what? Todd is gone. Like, I would have done that in a heartbeat because that's an extra tribal council that I'm around for.
PG, should Abby Maria's bracelet have been on Ghost Island?
Abby Maria's bracelet on Ghost Island probably would have been like a reverse advantage. If you find this bracelet, then it's like an extra vote against you. That's how that works.
Vote against you. Do you like Ghost Island, the concept?
No.
Why not?
First of all, it's like Club Med out there. Mm-hmm. Is it just me or are they getting as much rice as they want?
I think they get as much as they want. Yeah, and then fire.
The fire's already made for them, which is bullshit. Like,
yes.
Like, I mean, give them the supplies and have them make it. Like, I mean, how is it even fun to have it already be made? And then I don't even like some people get advantages, some don't. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's so much like randomness to that. Like, is it just the luck, you know, of which one you pick or whatever? Like, you know, I would prefer it to be almost like they should have made it more of a mini game, right? Because I've been really into these escape rooms lately.
Yes.
So if there were more like there's clues, you have to look around, it'll lead to this. And, you know, it's like if you're going to make it easy for them in that way with the surviving part, the food and the shelters are already
there. Give me an example. What would a mini game be?
Well, like, first of all, you have to find a clue, okay, amongst all of the relics or whatever. Maybe you have to look through all the relics and, like, hidden inside the stuffer. There's, like, a clue. Okay, so then, you know, and it'll maybe be a clue that'll lead you to, like, another relic. Mm-hmm. And just, you know,
Is that too much time on Ghost Island, though, in the episode?
I mean, I would rather watch that than watch everyone crying. Like,
you'd rather see them play the mini game than cry about whatever happened to them before they got to Survivor.
Yeah, if everybody's crying, then like
PG, did you cry on Survivor?
Oh, well, I cried twice on the first episode.
What
of my
were you
first
crying
season.
About? That it was Survivor was hard, or you were crying about stuff back home?
So in the first episode of Survivor China, my grandfather had just died.
Yes.
So I cried about that when we were going through like these temples and through the villages.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cried again when we lost the first challenge.
Yes.
And it just, you know, and it's like you feel like it's your fault and it's one of those things. So of course, you know.
And now you're so heartless. You're so mean to the new players that they just want to cry about what's going on in their lives.
You know what? They can cry. And I think everybody cried. Did you cry?
Not really. Not until I lost Survivor. Then I cried every day after that.
But they don't have to show it. People cry. Like, they're showing every single one. And it actually takes away from the moment, I think, a little bit when you just everyone's crying. Then nobody cares anymore.
Yeah. So this week on the show, we saw them go from two tribes to three tribes. And you were a part of that the very first time that it ended up happening that way in Survivor Second Chances.
I was very triggered.
Yes. Good. Well, I want to talk about that. And, you know, it's been interesting that we have the tribes broken down. And really, you know, we see these players, complaining about the different beaches. Did anybody have it worse than you guys going to Angkor Beach?
No, I think they learned their lesson because So let me get this straight. The what's the third tribe is like you.
You knew ya. you knew you were getting into trouble when you were on the third tribe.
You knew ya getting screwed. If you are, you knew ya. So we know they had no shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sucks. But okay, did they have no food?
I don't know, because it seemed like it was such a big deal in Survivor Game Change or Survivor Second Chances that, okay, the third tribe, it was like, it really was a setback for you guys. But in these other seasons that we've seen where they did it in Millennials versus Gen X, and then I think they did it in Game Changers and they did it here, it's like, no big deal. Ain't no thing.
I don't get that. Like, but is it because the other tribes had food already also. For us, it seemed like such a huge thing because everybody, both tribes had a lot of food and we had none. Mm-hmm. But I think also the conditions are a little bit harder in like where we were in Cambodia mm-hmm. than they are now.
Right.
I think one of the things with Fiji is it's actually not, the conditions are not as bad.
Yes.
And that's part of the reason why they keep going back there. Like the weather's not quite as bad or it's not quite as hot. You know, I don't know. Everybody thinks their season's the hardest.
Yes, everybody does. But I do think from all accounts that, you know, the Cambodia, you know, season that you guys played in was very rough, especially weather-wise. So let's get into talking about the tribe swaps from this week. And Tim from Columbus calls in to talk about this, PG.
Hey, Rob, this is Tim from Columbus. So unfortunately, we've seen this season a little bit of a pre-merge begonging or even an oolonging, if you will. Where the original Malolos have been picked off, and now there's only five of them left compared to nine original Navitis. And this has been kind of a trend in recent years. It happened both in Game Changers and Cambodia, where one tribe just completely dominated the other pre-merge. Do you know why this is happening and what we can do to fix it in the future? Thanks. Bye.
Okay, so we've seen where it's been five people from the original Malolo go out and only one person from original Naviti has gone out. And now here we are still clinging to these tribal lines, PG. Do we have a problem?
Well, I am no stranger to being in this situation.
Yes.
Okay, let me tell you, like both of the seasons I've been on, I have been on the losing end, the losing tribe mm-hmm. on both of my seasons. And I don't know if it's, I don't think it's coincidence that they're all yellow tribes or orange or
yes.
something. You know, and I actually did.
Unlucky.
I think the yellow or the orange color is unlucky.
Yes, statistically it is. That's true.
I did complain to one of the producers at one point. I said, how is it fair that, you know, say like on China, you know, I said the other tribe has somebody like James and Jean Robert, the two biggest dudes,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, it's stacked. And he goes, well, we put the biggest and the smallest people on one tribe. And he goes, your tribe had more well-rounded people overall. So that was his justification for how the tribe started out. And of course, they kicked our ass because the thing is, once the tribe with the big people get one advantage, they sit. You get to sit people out.
Right.
And so then it doesn't matter if they have the weaker people. Those weaker people get sat out every other challenge. So
mm-hmm.
I think it starts to build and build and build.
Yeah, momentum. You know, but I do think that there's something interesting here where now we've seen this three different times where we swap after two votes, where we did it first in Second Chances, then we did it again in Game Changers, and then we did it here. Millennials versus Gen X, they swapped. They went from two to three after four votes. But it's interesting where in all three of these times where we swapped once and then we swap again, where the same group went to tribal council the first two votes, where it was you guys in Takeo and then it was the Mana group in Game Changers, and now we saw here in this season. And I think that maybe something that's going on here is that the group that didn't go to tribal council, they don't have really any reason to strongly dislike each other. In this season, we have Chris and Dominic, who, like, those two guys themselves, like, okay, I'm gunning for you, you're gunning for me. But the rest of the group, I feel like that they're not split. So it's easier for them to stick together as, like, a big group of 9 or 10 people, whereas the group that already went to a tribal council, they sort of like know where the sides are.
Yeah. And it's not only that you know where the sides are too, but I think, you know, the group that does not go to tribal council, that's an extra night that they have to bond and hang out and chat. When you're going to tribal council, it's a long journey from when, you know, you start walking, you make the trek there, you're at tribal council, and we're in lockdown the whole time. You can't talk. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's like almost what, like 5 hours of lost time for you to kind of be bonding. And there's really not that much time considering how big the tribes are nowadays to bond. And I think that's just another factor that the tribe that doesn't go to tribal council has extra time to bond and get to know each other. So they're kind of tighter knit also because of that.
Mm-hmm. Let me pitch you on an idea. Okay. Tell me if this is going to Samoa or it's a NOAA. So 2 hour Survivor premiere. Both tribes are going to tribal council no matter what. And the challenge is like for some sort of like for fire or for reward, because a couple of things. One, then you could split them up. Then you could change things up after that first vote, because now everybody's been to a tribal council. And then two, you sort of like there's less of a stigma for the person who's the first boot. Even like for like Stephanie Gonzalez, that, you know, you had Jacob also went out in that first episode. So that's nice also, because I think that these groups that get split up before they go to a tribal council, I think it's easier for them to feel like, oh, I'm good with everybody in that group of 10.
So you want both tribes to go to the first tribal council?
Yes.
Like, oh, each tribe has to vote off one person?
Well, I don't know if I want this yet. Let's just talk it. I'm pitching an idea.
But you mean each tribe has to vote off one person?
Yes. In the first episode. Oh. Two tribal councils. Both tribes are going to vote somebody out in the first night. First episode.
I kind of like that. And, you know, because I think they're doing so much shuffling because they're trying to keep the people from having a pagoging or whatever they call it. But, you know, and then I think they should swap tribes right away after that.
Yeah, but then you have people who feel like, oh, my God, I'm on the bottom. I'm the next to go. Oh, thank God there's a tribe swap, because like for that, if Naviti would have gone to a tribal council, I mean, who knows? If, you know, maybe Chris would have gone home. Maybe Dominic would have gone home, or maybe, you know, if then their allies were like, oh man, we're screwed. We gotta work with these other people when we swap up the tribes, where as opposed to like, no, I should stick with my numbers because we have 10. That's the best move for me. And we, you know, could you talk a little bit about what that was like? You know, the Bayon group, they had never been to a tribal council. So were they more feeling like everybody was, you know, sort of honky dory with their group when they got to emerge?
I met like two members of the Bayon group. So, I mean, I couldn't even begin to comment on that. But I think you definitely, you know, there is that stigma also of, well, that team's been losing, so why do I want to associate with them? Like, we've been good. We work well together. Like, let's just keep sticking together. We've been winning. We're on a roll. And that, like having that kind of momentum is a serious thing. You know what I mean? Like, that really helps bond you.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the vote this week. And we saw James become the sixth person voted out of the game this week. He ends up in a pretty bad spot after the swap. What did you think of James?
I think it was such a bummer. Like, I think he can go out kind of at least proud that it wasn't any, you know, he did everything he could. And sometimes you're just in a really bad situation that you can't get out of. You know what I mean? And at least if you feel like you've tried everything, then you can go out of the game feeling pretty good about yourself. The worst is when you actually have some power and you made a bad decision and you get voted out because of that. Like, who was the one Naviti member that was Morgan? That's the worst, when
you're the one person from your original tribe that went.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did it have to be me?
Yeah, and you tried to change something up, and it actually didn't work out your way, and you're the one who ended up going home. I mean, you know, so yeah, I think he kind of did try everything he could have. He probably should have pushed the envelope with Angela a little bit more, but we never really see everything. Like,
yeah, I was watching that back this morning to go through it one more time. And I was really like paying attention to the, you know, James and Angela interactions. And I feel like that he's saying the right things to her. But, you know, she is sitting in the shelter and he's standing talking to her. And I just wanted to see him like sit down next to her and really like engage her and like, you know, I don't know if he should like put his arm around her. But it just like I think she's talking about about how lonely she is and everybody in her life left her. And I just feel like if he would have, you know, struck that chord with her of like, no, I'm your family now, Angela. It's me, James.
Your whole tribe, actually turned on you. They betrayed you.
Yes.
Like,
I have nothing too that you let's build this together.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he was saying the right things, but I just feel like that if he would have, you know, said it in a different tone, I feel like that there was an in there with her.
A little bit too stoic. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, a little bit too. And I think the problem is both of them are quite reserved.
Yes.
In a way, like you could kind of tell, like,
they both were people that think with their head. They were asked.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that you had somebody who, if somebody who could have been a heart person could have engaged her.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Like, you know, I'm surprised. Like, I feel like if anything, like, was it Michael?
Michael
should have also come up, because I feel like Michael is quite good at kind of creating those bonds and like being a little bit more personable, you know, and they could have really got to her. I mean, Kellen was pretty I think Kellen did a good job of kind of recovering Angela. She's like, hey, I wasn't a part of, you know, I wasn't there when you got backstabbed. Like, we don't know what's going on, but I'm, you know, like Navidi strong. And you could see Angela really wanted, like, she really wanted to belong to something. I think when you're in part of the military, you have that ingrained in you to be part of the group and, you know, have those people to rely on.
Yeah. All right. Let me play you a question. This is from Jared from Seattle, and he wants to talk to you about the James boot this week.
Hey, Robin PG. This is Jared from Seattle, longtime listener and first-time caller. What does PG think about how Asian Americans perform on Survivor? Recently, we've seen a lot of early boots like Mari and Simone. With the exception of players on the racially divided seasons like Yule and Yaman, the only Asian American players that have made deep runs into the game that come to mind are Tai and Wu, two people who aren't exactly known for their strategic prowess. What factors and possible stereotypes work against Asian Americans and hurt their chances of making it far into the game? I don't want to get too political, but I feel like the subject is just as relevant as the classic Survivor debate of how older female players are treated when they get to the end. Also, let PG know that I miss seeing Buttercat Rum on Lee, and that she should get back onto the stream. Thanks.
That he misses seeing Buttercat what?
Buttercat Rum.
Buttercat Rum.
It's my handle on my League of Legends. I'm wearing my jungler shirt.
Jungler.
This is from League of Legends.
Yes. Okay. What is jungler?
It's a role. It's okay. League of Legends is very similar to Survivor, let me tell you. Like, it's one of those things, it's the same map.
I know, you always talk about it.
It's the same game over and over, and it's different every time because of the strategy and the people playing. And I find that there's a lot of overlap. Like, you know, like people like one and like the other, like both equally obsessively, kind of like I do. Anyway, so I always get asked this question about the Asian Americans. First of all, I made it pretty deep.
Yes, I think that was a notable exception. But what about the idea that the people that we've seen go far who are the Asian Americans, at least recently, people like Wu or Tai, somebody that isn't necessarily like coming across as somebody who's overly strategic, but somebody who's coming across as, you know, either very, you know, eccentric, or in the case of Wu, he's like a surfer.
You know, that is an interesting point, because when you think about some of the people that have gone far, like I, like me or a Tai or a Wu, we're kind of your atypical, I guess, Asians. Like, we got kind of cast against type a little bit. And maybe the ones, well, no, Mari is pretty atypical,
I think, but Mari, I just think that was a sort of a crazy circumstance, what happened to her. It was a kind of a crazy blindside.
Yeah. You know, I feel like James is such, I hate to say not stereotypical, but, you know, there's all kinds, right? And it's like, he's super smart, clearly. Like, he went to, like, an Ivy League school.
Sure.
Is he, like, a business analyst or some?
I'm not sure what his exact occupation is.
Something very smart and respectable. That's.
I mean, well, Jeff Probst talked about in the preseason that his IQ was off the charts.
Yeah. Yeah. He's smart. He's, not only is he smart, but then he's not even, like, the nerdy type. He's
very athletic.
Very athletic, very built, you know. And his biggest problem is, I think he definitely comes across as quite very stoic. He kind of maybe keeps to himself a little bit. Like, he's not really sharing a lot. He's not kind of goofy or endearing and You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know what he's like out there, but this is just from what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, this, he's probably like me. When I first came into the game, I underestimated how important the social aspect is, you know, and you think like it's like the typical Asians, like our parents tell us, the most important part of school is getting good grades, you know. So you go through that, you think, well, it's just about the numbers and the strategy and what logically makes sense. But that's, you know, I'll tell you, the most successful people out there are the ones who are good at making friends and who networked throughout college, not the ones who got straight A's. Mm-hmm. They do the best in life, like, you know. So, but I think part of coming from an Asian background, you put your emphasis and importance on not on the social bonds. But in Survivor, it actually becomes really clear to me that that is what will get you through the game the most. I think that's why Michael's been able to stay around and he hasn't.
Mm-hmm. I do think, though, the biggest factor was that he just ended up with a group where it was three Naviti people. And then Michael had been with Kellen and with Desiree. And so he was just the more familiar person to keep around. And so I think he just, like, I don't think that there was anything that he couldn't overcome if he was in it with, you know, a different group of people. He just got really unlucky, too.
A lot of it is, yeah, no, it's definitely the circumstance. When you're, like, the kind of the odd man out in, like, mm-hmm. every single way,
yeah,
it's kind of an easy vote, especially when you haven't really been that close to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Michael had been doing a pretty good job of ingratiating himself, you know, with the other team. And he was really, I think, good at appealing to, say, Bradley's ego in a way of, like, I mean, I always hate having to see the underdog players do this, but having to kind of, like, beg for their lives, but mm-hmm. it works. And I think that the people in power kind of like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so we saw Michael doing a lot of that. Like, hey, man, I'm just trying to stay around. Mm-hmm. Like, just help me. Like, you know, I'll have your back from now on. And like having this, like, and we didn't see James really doing any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I kind of hate having to see them, like, turn on each other and sell each other out. But, like, Michael was doing a better job of that than James was.
Yeah. I mean, he voted for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So when, you know, push came to shove, you know, James had all of his Easter eggs in Angela's basket.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Happy Easter, by the way.
Happy Easter. Happy Easter. Okay. This is a question from one of our listeners, Dr. Mike, who texted me earlier today.
Dr. Mike?
Yes. He says, question for the show. Why is no one looking for an idol on the new island or for the one replaced when Mike played his? This is from Dr. Mike's 11-year-old and every other person that has ever watched the show, according to Dr. Mike.
Dr. Survivor Dr. Mike.
Yes.
Okay, okay,
yes.
Okay. So he's asking why people haven't been looking for the idol.
Yes, he feels like that. Why did nobody go and try to find the idol after Michael played an idol? Why aren't people out there looking for the new idol that Michael played? And I think the reason could potentially be is that they didn't put another one out there.
Are they all on Ghost Island? I mean,
the idols haven't been on Ghost Island so far, but I think that maybe after season 35, where every time an idol was played, a new one went back out there. Maybe this season they're not doing that. Maybe they're going to have one idol on each beach. And then when that's it, then no more idols until the pre-merge. And maybe there's an idol at the third tribe now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that I don't know necessarily if where maybe after, you know, 8 or 9 idols got played last season, maybe they felt like, okay, that's too much. Maybe they're walking it back.
God, I feel like, and it's a weird thing because people complain that there's too many idols being played, and now that it's like almost this season feels a little bit old fashioned in a way because there hasn't been very much idol play.
Yeah, do you like that or no?
I thought I would.
Yeah. But now you feel like it got a little boring the times when there is no idol at a vote.
Well, it's a little boring, too, because the votes have been so straightforward mm-hmm. and Naviti has been so dominant.
Yeah. And Dalton Ross talked about this. He wrote in his blog where that because we've been so over-idled in the last couple of seasons that now when you take an idol out of every single vote, that then people complain that it's boring.
I would be fine with no idols if maybe the players were more willing to shake things up. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see any of the Navitis stepping out of line or anyone saying, hey, you know what? Like, like, it's fine that we're safe, but I kind of want to take out one of the top dogs because I want to be the top dog and get new followers.
And I guess for me, that I feel like that an idol doesn't need to get played at every tribal council, but I do feel like that when there is not even the threat of the idol, like, I feel like that that's something that people need to account for, which sometimes can create some excitement. So I feel like that when the idols are out of circulation, as they have been for, you know, some of these last couple of votes, it's sort of like, okay, well, it's pretty much, you know, cut and dry. And I felt this week's episode, I felt like I didn't have any issue with it. And I thought that Desiree was going to go home, where the episode before I thought was more anticlimactic in terms of when and Stephanie was going home. But I feel like that if the other group was needing to account for an idol of potential, you know, could that potentially be out there? I feel like that maybe there could have been a little more intrigue.
Yeah, or like James should have like made a fake idol also, because, you know, they know that, like, oh, in past seasons, people are finding three idols a day. Like, you know, so like that would have been really interesting, because now it's such a small tribe. If he's like, hey, I have an idol, and suddenly what, three of them have to try to split votes, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So what do you think was the case? Do you think that there was not another idol put out there at Malolo, or it was a failure on the part of the players to be out there looking for another idol?
Or it could have been that they were looking and nobody found one, so they didn't even bother showing it at all. Like,
I'm sure if you asked the players, they would be like, oh, trust us, we looked.
But I have spent hours and hours looking too. And at some point also, you kind of feel like you're wasting time that you could be better spent. You know, I mean, here's the thing too. It's like, do I spend hours and hours by myself looking for an idol? Or do I take that
make inroads
and bond with some people? Because the thing is now too, I think the problem is that, you know, before, so in my first season, if you went off alone, it was not a big deal. They were like, oh, he just needs some time to think. He just needs some space. And now the minute you go off to take a piss, everyone's like, is he looking for an idol? Like, and you come back and they're so suspicious of you that, like, on Cambodia, nobody left at all. Everyone just stayed at camp because the minute one, you don't want that suspicion on you. So then, like, nobody would go look for it, you know, unless maybe you're back from taking one of your walks, and then you would kind of take a little detour. Like, so who knows?
Okay. PG, I want to talk about throwing some challenges with you. But first, let me take a moment and thank one of our sponsors. Those are friends over at Nectar Sleep. Now, PG, I know you're moving. What's your mattress situation? Are you good? Like, Wendell says, let's talk about your bed. Let's talk about your mattress.
I need a new. I do, in fact, need a new bed.
PG, well, you're so in luck. Get the mattress that your bed will dream about. It's America's most comfortable mattress for a cloud-like experience with Nectar. That they've got a great offer, $125 off, and two premium pillows with any mattress order and free delivery. That's at nectarsleep.com/RHAP. It's the world's most comfortable mattress, and they're so sure they will let you keep the mattress for up to 1 year. And if you don't like it at any point, they will just come and take it away. It's the easiest breakup in the whole world. They will come and take the mattress away and give you your money back if you're not 100% happy and riding into the sunset. They've got a Nectar Sleep mattress. It's an 11-inch deep mattress. They're very excited about that, with 5-layer technology. And it's a mattress like no other on the market. So it's breathable, cooling, body contouring, medical grade Lush foam gel memory layer foam. It's so many things. It's like a bean dip of, like, that you think you're digging into memory foam, and there's gel. It's fantastic. The most comfortable mattress that there is, with the forever warranty. So they are so sure that you're going to love it. You'll fall asleep 20% faster than people who sleep on other mattresses, according to a study they did. So get $125 off and two free pillows on any mattress order with free delivery. That's at nectarsleep.com/RHAP. Get the best sleep you've ever had for every night for the rest of your life, and then some. Okay. All right. Let's talk about throwing some challenges, PG. Something that you knew so well about back in Survivor China, when you decided to throw a challenge to take out... I can't even remember. What was the guy's name that it was?
Aaron Riceberger.
Yes, he got screwed so badly. Andy writes on Twitter, If there isn't a question about Navidi throwing challenges and who benefits the most, can I ask it here? So he wants to know that should Naviti, which is the tribe that now has Dominic and Donathan and Bradley and Chelsea and Libby, should they throw a challenge?
Why would they throw a challenge?
Dominic says he doesn't like Libby. Says that Libby is the devil in angel clothing.
He's just saying that to Bradley because he's throwing her under the bus. Like, he's trying to save his own butt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you know, and obviously he's worried because she's pretty. She could be working some, you know, flirty magic or something. So, I mean, but so who's going to want to throw the challenge? Like, Dominic?
Yes.
Dominic doesn't want to throw the challenge because he's just as much on the chopping block. He doesn't know. You only want to throw the challenge when you know for a fact that you're safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, maybe the dominant, like the former Navidis, maybe want to throw it if they want to flush an idol out. Say, like, you know, he'll be like, oh yeah, I agree with you, Libby's the devil, and then maybe he can vote out Dominic with his idol.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I could really see them wanting to throw a challenge, but it doesn't make any sense for them to, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. What about, according to Gregory asks, should Chris consider throwing the last challenge before the merge to get rid of Wendell? I don't think that Chris should be throwing any. He should be tossing rocks, not challenges.
I don't think Chris's ego would even allow him to throw a challenge in the first place.
Yes.
He's got to win everything. But I think, again, though, do you think he realizes that he is in slight danger because they want to take out the big guys right before the merge? Or is...
Does Chris realize he's in danger? I don't think so. I don't think that Chris really realizes anything.
He's so exhausted from being charismatic that he can't spare a moment to think about strategy or these things.
That's right. He wants to just keep all of the big dogs in the game. That's his strategy of what he wants to do. Okay, well, let's talk about Chris. I know you're excited to talk about everything going on with Chris, and we got a lot of questions for you talking about Chris. Hey, this is Dave from Ohio.
Hey, Rob and PG. This is Dave from Ohio, aka Matt Fridge on Twitter. And Survivor China is one of my favorite seasons, so I have a very important question for PG. Ding, marry, kill. Chris Noble, Dave Cruiser, and Derek Zoomlander.
Okay. Now, PG, you too played with a male model in Dave Cruiser.
Yes, I did, in fact.
Yes.
Yeah, what is up with these? They're really hitting casting gold with these male models. Like,
yes. To be more male models.
Oh, man. Like, Dave Cruiser was the most annoying man on the face of this planet.
That would be the kill.
Definitely kill.
Okay. All right. And then, so Chris Noble.
So what are my last options? It's marry or...
Ding.
Ding.
All right. Well, let's not get stuck in the weeds on this. All right. Let's talk about Chris Noble, because he really was on fire in the episode. And I've pulled some of Chris's clips. I'd love to hear you comment on some of the things that Chris had to say in this week's episode of the show. This is Chris talking about some of the challenges he faces.
You know, when you're a big athletic guy and charismatic like I am, I won't lie to you, it's exhausting.
Yeah. Exhausting.
I mean, how does he get anything done with how charismatic he is?
Yes. You know, it's tough. What do you think? All that charisma comes easy?
And actually the editors were being really kind to him because he did not get the weird dodo or clown music that like Stephen Fishbach gets. He got...
don't trigger him. No.
He got this kind of like amusing,
yeah,
light amusing music.
Yes.
You know, it was like, we're not really laughing at you. We're teasing you because we're bros. And so we can kind of make fun of you, but we still like kind of admire you in a way. I mean, I feel like he got off really easy. I mean, the edit's funny and it's painting him out, but it's not making him that buffoonish.
Well, let's keep going. So then Chris talked about, what he's thinking in terms of his portfolio.
I look at myself as my own entrepreneur, even though I'm not investing in a million things right now. I see myself investing in me.
Yeah. So he's an investor, but he's not investing in a bunch of things. He's investing in himself.
Well, you know, he's picked the best product. He's evaluated all the products.
Yes.
And he's clearly smartly invested in the best one.
In Chris Noble. Yeah. Put all your stock into Chris Noble. Then he told us then he had a revelation for Laurel. And he wanted to tell her that he, in fact, has a secret, which he wanted to share with her.
And I do model.
Oh, you model?
I haven't told anybody.
Ooh.
Actually, I told Libby that I used to model.
So
he had to unburden himself. It was weighing so heavily on him that he couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
You know, this was a relief off of his back.
Now, did Dave Cruiser just come out and tell everybody that he was a model on day one, or was it a reveal?
Well, technically, Dave Cruiser's occupation was former male model.
Yes.
So
he's a bartender, right?
He was a former male model.
Yes. Did that become public knowledge during the show, or only not until you saw, like, the lower thirds?
No. We knew. He talked quite clearly. I mean, this is what you call people when they're otherwise unemployed, you know, former or something.
Right. So did Dave Cruiser tell you all the different cities that he was employed in?
He did, in fact,
yes.
Go through quite a list of how he was very experienced in bushwhacking because he had modeled in South Africa and so forth and so on. I think my favorite moment of that is when Laurel actually looks at the camera and eye rolls. Like, I was like,
yeah, she played that really well. I thought that was really good. And for me, it was reminiscent of it. I didn't want to say this during the live show that we were doing the other night, but to me, it was similar to in Token Jeans when Erin is talking about Coach and she's like, who is this jackass? And I felt like that was similar, and I almost brought that up, and I said, I don't want to offend Coach.
I mean, when you're able to kind of just, Laurel played it off so perfectly, and being able to just kind of like, yeah, oh, tell me more about yourself.
Oh, like, really? Male model, you said?
Yeah. Tell me more about how many volleyball tournaments you've won.
Okay. And then one more. Chris talks about how he did not want to tell people in the game about he was a male model.
I'm hesitant to tell people that I model because for some crazy reason, people think that models might be self-absorbed, might be dumb. Just a lot of things that might not be beneficiary to me.
Like, how classic is that?
It wasn't very beneficiary at
no,
all.
No, it was not.
Beneficiary.
It was only beneficiary to the Survivor editors. But how great was that he would have... Look, I misspeak all the time. But to have him in a confessional talking about, you know, the thing about male models is like people, there's a stigma against us.
A crazy stigma.
For some crazy reason, people think that we might not be all that bright. And
we're kind of self-absorbed.
Self-absorbed and other things that might not be beneficiary.
Beneficiary.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, he's just so exhausted all the time.
Well, yeah, again, yes, he's tired because when you're that charismatic, it's draining.
Beneficiary.
Okay. But that being said, for Chris, it has not been all bad. We're talking about that he's doing things well out there. And I really liked how he ended up talking with Wendell and sort of like, you know, settling the beef that was going on with him and Dominic. So he has been doing some things well. We saw him also with Donathan in last week's episode where he was bonding with Donathan. So this is a question. This is from Nick from Sydney, who wants to talk about the long-term prospects of Chris Noble.
Hey guys, Nick from Sydney here, long time, first time. and I've got a question and maybe a bit of a hot take about a possible winner for this season. Week to week, the show's been really good at disguising what tribe's going to tribal council and who's going home. So I think the same thing might be happening to the winner of the season. Not many people would think that this person that I'm talking about has much chance to win at all, but I think Chris is a really good winner candidate. The show might be masking it the same way that they do the tribal council boot every week. He's getting great scenes that show he's connecting to people. He's getting really good athletic ability scenes. And I was just wondering whether you guys think that there is a possibility that Chris could win. Survivor might be ready for another villain to win. Yes, he's getting the Dodo music, but he's also playing the game really, really well. He was my pick for first boot, but now I'm starting to think that he might be a winner. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. PG, you've seen so many things in your Survivor days. Could you imagine a scenario where the winner of the season is Chris?
When hell freezes over. There's no way. I'm sorry. I don't think there's any way Chris is winning. I mean, unless he has some kind of massive transformation, like later on, like post-merge, like who knows? It may be possible that he's brought low and then gets some kind of redemption, but he's flavor right now. He's kind of background. He's like the Keith.
He's flavor.
Well, he's like the Keith Neal. He's funny. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting a big edit because he's just about the funniest character out there. That's why he's getting such a big edit. Like, because no one else is. Everyone else is a little bit bland, to be quite honest.
Well, that's Seabass.
Except for Seabass. Yes. Seabass is good, too. But besides that, everyone's kind of. They're more straightforward. Even their confessionals aren't that funny. It's very much about gameplay or they're sobbing. You know, it's like the opposite of being funny. They're sob. Everyone's got their sob story and their emotional journey, and it's fine.
But they're very emotional.
You know, I don't see him winning. I mean, even if he makes it all the way to the end, which if he makes it to the merge, he has a good chance of winning the challenges. He's shown him that he's pretty good at challenges. So
yeah, but does that guy typically win the challenges? I mean, Brad went on a run and Mike Holloway went on a run. And those are like typical like alpha male athletes. And Joey Amazing won 5. But I just feel like that a big guy like that, I think that eventually there's going to be a challenge that is not going to be his strong suit.
Yeah, but he has been good at even the agility or balance ones too. Usually that's when like it's like either you're good at, you know, the brute strength, but maybe you're not that agile.
But then there's going to be a puzzle somewhere along the way.
Yeah, he may get caught up on the. Well, you know, I mean, it's crazy to think that he's not that smart. I mean, we're really stereotyping him as a model.
Yes, yes. Go on, PG. That's not nice.
Beneficiary.
Let's take a question from Brent the Shower Man. Has a question about the Wendell and Seabass interaction.
What's up, Rob and PG? This is Brent the Shower Man. How good was the move on Wendell's part to save the shell for Sebastian? It was a small gesture that clearly meant a lot to him, and with all the talk of big moves and Ben bombs, how underrated are social moves like this in general in Survivor? Thanks. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. So, PG, what about the idea of Wendell saving those shells for Seabass?
Brilliant. I think Wendell is definitely like someone that you got to keep your eye out.
Yes.
You know, for because something like that, and the thing is, he did it, I think, genuinely just because he's a nice guy. There's no confessional about him. Oh, mastermind, I'm using this to gain points or anything. It was just like, hey, man, I saved a shell. I know it was important to you. And like, I knew we'd be reunited and here you go. Like, it was so, you know, and because it was genuine, I think that's what really helped him build those bonds. And he's just kind of a nice guy like that. Like, it was a brilliant move.
Do you like Wendell's toothpick?
Oh. What is he using as...
I don't know, but I feel like if I was going to make up a fake Survivor Twitter account, I feel like Wendell's toothpick would be my number one pick right now.
Let me tell you, toothpicks are like gold out there. Like, so I, you know, it's whatever he's got, it's working.
Okay, all right. This is a question about the interaction between Wendell and Seabass about the shell, and this is Mike who wants you to weigh in on this.
Hey, Robin PG, Mike calling with a question for PG, who obviously knows a thing or two about jewelry. And if I know anything about jewelry, it's that shells make great jewelry. So were you surprised to see Sebastian, who literally lives on a beach, referring to a cowrie shell as a conch shell? Just seems like something that he should know the difference between. And do you think he's going to get in trouble with the Fijian government pocketing that shell a la Colby Donaldson?
First off, PG, are you a shell expert?
Well, enough to know that it's also pronounced conch.
Yes, yes.
I've been saving this gorgeous conch shell. I found that old Navidian. Wendell had the heart to drag that all the way out here in his bag, reeking of dead conch.
He did pronounce it right.
Dead conch. And now it's not, so it's not, so he's right. It's not conch, it's conch.
It's conch.
Conch. Okay.
And I only know because I go to Belize a lot, which I love. Mm-hmm. And conch is like one of, I don't know, like their national foods or something. And I've probably eaten them like to extinction out there.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm surprised. He's a fisherman, mm-hmm. right? Like you would think that he would kind of know the difference. But again, you know, I'm not that surprised, though, mm-hmm. considering everything else we've seen from him.
From Seabass. Yes. Okay. So let the record book show that Seabass is pronouncing it right, but that's not what he thinks it is.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But still a good move for Wendell.
Oh, speaking of jewelry, actually, did I wear these for you last time? I brought my fish hook earrings.
Oh, fish hook earrings. Okay.
Yeah.
We're trying to record the video. I don't know if we, they're very tiny. So you brought the fish hook earrings, but not the flint jacket.
No, did I bring that? I feel like I showed you last time.
Did you show us last time?
I may have. So I figured I'd bring these. Like it's an actual fish hook.
Don't lose it. Okay. And did you get far enough into the, like, did you get into the game with them or they confiscated them?
No, I got them into the game, but it didn't matter because we were given fishing gear
so
anyway.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then were you afraid to, like, do women wear earrings often, like dangly earrings on the show? Like, I feel like that would be unusual.
Yeah, you just wear them, like I would just wear them. I would take them off and maybe wear them to tribal council.
Oh,
for,
yes.
You know, you got to dress up for
a formal affair.
Yeah, you dress up for a special occasion.
Okay, here is a email for you. Let's talk a little bit about Michael, because that he has really been very front and center throughout this season. This is a question. This is from Brett from Sydney, who wants to know from PG. Would love to hear your thoughts on Michael. Is he being overrated a little as a strong player, which I keep hearing? From what I can remember, he's gone to 5 of the 6 tribal councils because of immunity losses and 2 out of the 3 reward losses. While these are team challenges, he's not exactly leading his teams to victory. I don't even think he attempted a puzzle, which is the most important aspect. And Kellen now appears to be controlling his vote. As a result, he barely has any allies left. His only strategic play was playing the idol for Steph, which, while entertaining, was played incorrectly. Thanks, Brett. Okay. Is Michael being overrated by the Survivor fans? PG?
No.
No!
Michael is actually one of my picks to win.
Okay.
I think he has a good chance of winning the whole thing.
Could you imagine you go on Survivor, and then you lose, and then you find out that the person that won says, oh, and by the way, I'm 18 years old. I'm not even 20. You thought you got beat by a 23-year-old, and actually, I just graduated high school.
Yeah, but he is like a 40-year-old in an 18-year-old
yes.
body. It's like the best situation possible.
Mm-hmm.
He has actually really impressed me. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Malcolm
yes.
from Philippines
yes.
his first time, where just kept losing and losing, even though he's trying and, like, you know, but he is really good, I think, socially. Like, he is, mm-hmm. in fact, like, I don't know how he's not tired, because he's, in fact, very charismatic as well.
Yes, he must be, because being charismatic is exhausting.
You know, when you're a big athletic guy and charismatic like I am, I won't lie to you, it's exhausting.
Yes.
Because he's also a model, right?
Yes, he is also a model. So that I know there's a lot of anti-model bias out there.
But it's... I think it's kind of cool because he's a fantastic foil to Chris, because they're so different. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and it may be the edit, but like he's coming off as, it's probably also the position he's in, but he's kind of
right.
Ingratiating
himself
to people.
He also tends to not start sentences as a male model.
As someone who's so athletic and charismatic.
Yes. When you're as charismatic as I am.
I think he's doing really well for the position that he's been in. And even, you know, like I've met him in person, he is surprising. Like, not only is he even better looking in person, but he's actually such.
How is that possible, PG?
I don't know. It's like what's happening in the world, but he is very charismatic even in person.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, and you would never guess that he's 18. Like, if he would have told me he's 35, I'd have been like, well, okay, you look great for 35. Like,
yes.
You know, I was very impressed with the idol bluff that mm-hmm. he pulled with, like, you know, because it was actually really smart. Like, and it was kind of maybe possible.
Yes.
Right. Because, oh, well, there are two idols. They combine them into whatever. Who knows? They've been doing crazy stuff with that, you know, with them. And like, I think he's worked himself into a pretty good position considering how bad his position is. So, you know, I like him. I like where he's at. I think he's a great foil to Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hashtag male models. I'm into it.
Okay. Except for Dave Cruiser.
Well, the former male models don't count.
Okay. So active male models. PG's into it. Okay. But for Michael, he could be in a bad position moving forward because he is on this group of four. And as we've talked about, you know, there's a lot of momentum that goes into the tribal part of the game. And he could very much be on the hot seat this week. Let's take this question. This is from Isaac.
Hello, PG and Rob. It's Isaac from Wisconsin calling. If Malolo does, in fact, go back to tribal council again, what kind of moves can Michael make to make sure that he isn't the one voted out? One idea that I thought of is that if he's able to use the paranoia that Kellen and Desi have against Angela and convince them that James went home the other night because he convinced Angela not to flip, is this an effective strategy that he could use to ensure he's not the one that goes home? Thanks.
Okay. So for Michael, he's going to be in a tight spot here with this tribal council for four, where it probably is going to be either him or Angela if they go back to tribal council. And I think there's a really good chance that they're going back to tribal council. So what should he do? First, let me just speak to the Isaac's question of should Michael tell Kellen that he convinced Angela to not flip? No. I think that is not a good idea.
Kellen knows that Kellen's the one that convinced her not to flip.
Right.
So for him to even come and try to take credit for that.
Don't do that.
No, don't do that.
That would be bad. That would be the opposite of everything he's done so far.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but what can he do?
It's tough. It's three chicks mm-hmm. against him.
Mm-hmm.
He is very good. He is very good looking.
That happens to be, you know, a big part of his core demo.
Right. So, he has not pulled the flirt card
mm-hmm.
yet. I think he should try to work some charm on one of the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Kellen's not budging. She is so deep in Bradley's pocket, like, she doesn't have eyes for anyone else.
So, do you feel like that she would get rid of Michael? Because I feel like that, but she's put so much work into Michael as somebody that I feel like that she feels like she has his vote. You don't think that she has more stock in Michael than she does potentially in Angela?
Yes. So, I think his best play to survive another tribal council is to let them know kind of how unstable Angela is. He's like, you know what? I'm with you guys 100%. Tribe lines are so blurred now. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, hey, man, I know you're tight with Bradley. I'm really tight with Bradley. I want to work with you two. He's like, Angela, she's pissed about the betrayal.
So
who knows?
Can he kind of blow up Angela, sort of like get her, like, you know, and then to the point where she's like complaining, like, I don't know what's in with it. What's that Michael's problem? And like, whoa, you're crazy. Michael is awesome. What are you talking about, Angela?
Yeah, no, that's his smartest play is to, like, I think he needs to mess with Angela's paranoia, and because she's already paranoid. She's had tribe mates turn on her once. So he mm-hmm. needs to kind of, you know, work on her and be like, hey, man, you know, they're whatever, talking crap about you. So she will start acting weird. And then he needs to go up to Kellen and like be like, hey, she's erratic. You can't depend on her. I'm solid as a rock. Like, you saw how loyal I was. I played an idol for one of my teammates, but I'm team Kellen and Bradley and whoever, like, all the way. Like, I think that would save him in the next trouble.
Can we talk about Desiree for a minute? Because we haven't talked much about her really on any of the podcasts. And I was paying attention to her as well when I did my rewatch this morning. I think that Desiree has actually played a really good game so far. And I don't think that she, you know, I know she was like sort of on the chopping block this week. And I did kind of think she was going to go home. But I think that she's actually been pretty good. And I think that she's somebody who now when she's going to make it to the merge, you know, assuming she doesn't get voted out this week, which I think is unlikely, you know, I think that she's somebody that we have to start to watch out for.
I mean, yeah, but she hasn't been that interesting either. Like,
Boy, how interesting does she have to be?
To be on my TV, she has to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, but you have to remember.
Now, is that an edit thing? It's like, okay, well, if she was going to be really somebody to think about, then she would have had a bigger edit to this point.
Look, my favorite character up to this, up until I played with her, was Abby Maria.
Mm-hmm.
like, I love hot ass messes that are crazy for no reason, mm-hmm. you know? So the thing is, of course, you know, she'll probably make it far because she's a good player, but she's been kind of under the radar. She hasn't really been that offensive to anyone. She's been doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's so boring. Like, mm-hmm. you know.
Get over it.
I need her to fight with somebody yes. or, you know, something.
Well, she's been good. And I kind of thought that maybe we were going to get that from her in the season. But no, she's been, you know, very even keel. And she was, you know, put in the position where she was the caller this week. It was very hard for her. She talked about how it was so terrible.
The day was probably the worst moment of my life.
And she was homeless. Losing this challenge is the worst day of her life. She's like homeless for like months, I think.
Well, being on Survivor,
that's how bad it was.
Being on Survivor feels like being homeless. So you're already used to that part, but then you're losing on top of that. I mean, she's probably doing all right. Like, if she hasn't had that big of an edit, or, you know, then she'll probably get kind of relatively far.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, she's playing a good game. Like, she's got her good allies. Like, you know, she's always been safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know who her tightest ally is. I guess it's Kellen, but I feel like that Kellen has like two or three other people that she likes better than Desiree.
Yeah, we haven't seen Desiree really bonding with anyone else, even in the previous episodes.
She hasn't got a lot of airtime, no.
No, she'll probably go far.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about one other thing about Michael. This is a question, and this is from Matt.
Hey, Rob and PG. This is Matt from Indiana. Just had a quick question about Michael. If Michael's able to make it to the end, do you think the jury would reward him for voting off some of his fellow Malolo members and being flexible? Or do you think that they would punish him for kind of latching on to the plan and not having control? Thanks.
So for Michael, if he was to completely turn against his old tribe, help the Naviti get rid of the Malolo, do you think, is that something that would help him or hurt him at the final tribal council?
I don't think any of it matters as long as you get to the end. I mean,
yes. Well, I was going to even go even further. I don't think that there's anything that matters from the pre-merge at the final tribal council. I think that anytime that people talk about things that happened before the merge, and especially before the jury started, I think it's a waste of breath. I don't think anybody even cares.
Well, and also they haven't seen, they don't know that they have no idea that he voted for James,
mm-hmm.
right? You know what I mean? Like, how most of the people that if he makes it to the end, most of them would not have even seen how he voted or seen these mm-hmm. tribal councils. So they don't. Yeah, it doesn't matter. What matters is post merge, everyone then knows each other, knows how each other's games are going.
Yeah, I think that we're figuring something out here, because I feel like that there is some sort of like every day on Survivor becomes more and more important to the point where, you know, that like if you won two challenges and they were the last two challenges, as opposed to you won the first two, it was probably harder to win the first two challenges because there was like 12 and 13 people. Nobody cares. If you got to the final tribal council, it's like, well, I won two immunities, but if you won the last two immunities,
yeah.
People are like, wow, that's pretty impressive. And so, yeah, anything you did in the pre-merge is almost does not count.
Nobody brags about that at their final tribal.
People do. But it never is a good play. And so, yeah, you can do whatever you want. Just survive.
Yeah.
Just get through it. I mean, I really feel like that, you know, that Sandra strategy of, you know, anybody but me, just get through the pre-merge and then figure it out.
And people, I think, respect that you were able to make your way so far, having actually the cards stacked against you. I think they would respect you more.
Well, he is now starting to get into that Denise Stapley territory of where he went to, he's been to 5 of 6 tribal councils. And now, again, that's not the end of the world. You know, Ryan last season, I think, probably went to, I think, every tribal council except for 2. And that didn't do him a lot of good.
It's brutal.
But it's, you know, that he's persevered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he's doing good, and he hasn't really given up, too. You know what I mean? He's not, like, moping around and woe is me and wringing his hands. So, you know, as long as he can
he's
keep
a fighter.
Up the, yeah, keep up the good spirits, and I think, you know, you I think he has a good chance.
Okay. Let's take a email. This is from Walt from Utah, and he writes this email for PG. We all know PG's knowledge of Dungeons and Dragons. Who are your favorite 3 players of the season, and what is their alignment? Example, chaotic neutral, lawful good, neutral evil. And who in the cast do you see as the dungeon master? I know this is probably the nerdiest email to be submitted to the show, which I wear as a badge of honor. That's Walt from Utah.
So who are my favorite?
So you, Dungeons and Dragons, you do all that too?
Oh, yeah. I used to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
Like, you know the alignments and what they mean and everything?
Yes.
Okay. So, like, I always, my favorite characters are always chaotic evil. Like, you know, and evil doesn't even mean you're a bad person. Evil means that you are completely self-interested. You know, you don't care about the good of the tribe. You only really care about what's good for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the most fun players to watch, you know.
Yes.
So someone like Chris Noble.
Yes.
Is he is probably he's definitely evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, is he chaotic or he's probably kind of he's probably lawful evil.
Lawful evil, Chris Noble.
Because, you know, I think he's not just trying to cause disarray, like he is trying to form.
No, Desiree.
he is trying to form some kind of group behind him, you know, but mostly it's not about, he doesn't talk about the good of the group. It's all, you know, for the good of Chris Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about Bradley? We haven't talked about Bradley much.
Bradley is lawful evil also.
He's lawful. He's not chaotic. He wants to stay with Naviti.
Russell Hans isn't chaotic evil. Chaotic evil is really like psychotic,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't really care what the outcome is. They just want to mess things up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, honestly, Bradley is very textbook lawful evil.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Shadow Knight. Like he probably has his
Shadow Knight.
Yeah. Well, he has his code of how he's going to treat the people that follow him. And, you know, but really he only cares about getting his group's interests ahead. And he doesn't care about how that affects other people. You know, he was like, haha, like I'm going to laugh while we cut all these people off. He's not like, oh, I feel sorry for these, you know, oh, I'm these people are in such a bad position. I kind of feel bad. Like I feel guilty that I have to vote them off. Like
he doesn't feel guilty.
No, he's cackling evilly in his corner.
Okay. So we have 2 lawful evil characters in Chris and Bradley. And then who else do you like?
Seabass.
Okay. Yeah. And then what's he?
Seabass is probably, he's chaotic neutral.
Chaotic neutral.
He just wants someone to braid his hair. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm winning this. So like yeah, he's flown along. He's mm-hmm. been lucky, like, to be where he is, and he's relatively safe. And he's one of those people that, like, you know, Jenna is kind of like, okay, I can kind of latch on him because he's in a good place. He's friends. He's got the right connections. Like, I'll kind of attach myself to this. I'll barnacle myself to this ship. You know, he's staying afloat.
Conk, yeah. What would Donathan be?
Donathan is, oh God, Donathan's a hobbit, no?
Yes. And so which of those things? Is he lawful good, Donathan?
Donathan's lawful good.
Okay.
I feel like you can kind of count on him. He's like a good old, you know, good old boy. Like he's not, he seems pretty straightforward. He doesn't have a ton of tricks up his sleeve. He's totally naive. Like he seems a bit naive in a way, like, you know, when Chris came over and kind of was like, you know, bonding with him, and suddenly he's got a new bow, and he's like, oh, like he's got these heart-eyed emojis. He's like, well, now I don't want to vote off this. Like, I don't, you know, now I like him. Like,
yeah. Okay. Let me play for you this question. And this is from Amanda from Philly. And she wants to know your opinion as a jewelry expert. This is from Amanda.
Hi, Rob and PG. This is Amanda from Philadelphia calling. I have a question for PG. As a fashion designer, I wanted to hear what you thought about Dominic's choice of wearing a necklace around his forehead, like a headband. What do you think about this fashion choice? And do you think there's any strategy involved? Thanks a lot.
Okay, did you catch this during the episode?
I feel like I faintly kind of remember it. You don't have a picture of
it. I'm trying to find it. I have the episode queued up, and I'm trying to watch it. So if you see, he's got this necklace on as a headband there. And you can see him with the necklace on.
No,
sorry.
Can't.
Okay. All right. So here we are. And then he's going to get a new buff, and then you can see that he's got this necklace. I don't know if it's the fake immunity idol necklace that he has on his head, but he is he's taking this necklace and he is using it to, I don't know, it's not really to hold back his hair or anything.
That's not a good look.
No, not a good look. Not a good look. Why not?
It's a little girly.
Why? What's wrong with that, PG?
Well, I mean, it would look good on Donathan. But
So Donathan can pull it off. Dominic can't pull that look off.
No, it's like guys that use the Snapchat filter with like the flowers, like the the garland, the lei or whatever,
the crown of lei.
Yeah. No, it's.
So could Chris Noble pull it off?
Yes. I feel like Chris is a better look for Chris Noble.
You better look for Chris. Okay.
Yeah.
So sorry for Dominic. Okay. Let's take this question for you. And this is from Jay in Jacksonville has a question for you.
Hey, Rob and PG. It's Jay from Jacksonville. I am loving all the survivors on the voicemail so far this season. And PG, I want to know, from your two seasons, who are the three survivors you would most like to hear on the voicemail podcast? And who are the three survivors you would least like to hear on the voicemail podcast? Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right. Do you have any booking advice for me?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
So, but from my two seasons,
I'll open it up if you have other people. I mean, you could start with your seasons, but if you want to go outside, I'll allow it.
Well, I just know the people from my seasons. Right,
then stick to the question.
Have you had Courtney Yates on?
You know what? I don't think we can get her.
Why?
We've never been able to get her.
Why? She would do it.
She would.
I think she would. She's like way in. She
we'd love to have her if you know, people. I see people say to her on Twitter like, hey, would you do it? She never responds or favorites it, so I don't think we could get her.
Have you reached out? Did you?
I never see her.
But okay, so here's the thing. Like, when I first played with her, you know, I was like, this bitch doesn't care about Survivor. She doesn't even like it. Literally, out of everybody from Survivor China, she has actually been the most active person in the Survivor community.
That's why I don't know why she doesn't want to come on.
I will tell her to come on.
Okay, good. All right. That's good.
You absolutely...
People will be thrilled.
You have to get Courtney on.
I would love to.
Who else would be fun? Like,
in fairness, we've talked to her in the past, but like not in like 7 years or something like that. Like, it's been a minute.
You have to get... I'll make it happen.
Okay.
I know people.
Okay. We'd love to. We'd be so excited.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun. Mm-hmm. God, who else? I feel like you haven't had many people from my first season on. Have you had Todd on?
Yes, Todd. We had a Todd on. Actually, we talked to him again last season. Yeah, we've had Todd on. We've had Amanda on. And
Jamie Dugan's really fun.
Is she?
Yeah.
I don't really know Jamie Dugan.
Yeah, she's a blast. She's hilarious.
Get Jamie and Eric.
That would be fun.
I like that. I like when I can get a couple. We had like Brad and Monica last season.
Yeah. Get them. I think they would do it.
Okay.
And then who else?
I don't think we've had anybody else from China. I think that's it.
That's a decent chunk.
Did I say Amanda?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You've had Amanda and Todd and me.
Yes. And I think we've had almost everybody from Cambodia, at least at one point in time.
Yeah. I mean, Varner's fun to talk to, but I don't think he would do any. I don't think he's done.
Okay. That's fine.
You know, and I don't think it would be good for him.
That's fine. It's fine. Okay. So we'll see. I'm open to suggestions. People like, you know, I feel like that people would want to hear anybody once.
Yeah.
This is very hard. You came back. This is, you know, I feel like there's a curiosity to come back and do the show again. That really means a lot to me.
Why? This is so much fun. And it's like, I don't have any other outlet to really talk about the show. So it's always fun when I get to come and like discuss it. And I keep up with it a bit. I don't watch it all the time because I'm just like, I don't know, too busy playing League of Legends.
Yes. Survivor or Rob is a podcast?
Survivor.
Okay.
I haven't been able to keep over. I haven't kept up with the podcast.
That's fine. I just wanted clarity.
But I do keep up with the Survivor Reddit.
Yes.
So,
because you were the original Survivor on Reddit.
The AMA. I did the first AMA.
And now every single person has done one.
Yeah. I was inspired by Obama, who did an AMA. And I was like, well, you know what? If our president can do one, then I will
do
one.
So Barack Obama did an AMA what year?
God, I don't remember.
Well, let's see. Well, how many years ago was it that you played in China? What year was that on?
Oh, you're really dating me, man.
I'm sorry, PJ. I'm not trying.
11 years ago.
11 years ago. And that was it was 2007. So
2007.
Survivor China was on.
Yeah.
And then when did Obama do an AMA? He came right into office and then first thing AMA?
No, I think it was like maybe 2011, something around that time, something like that.
And then you said, if Obama can do an AMA, so can I.
Yeah.
Okay. And you were the only survivor to do one for a while.
Well, actually, I didn't even know what Reddit was, but my sister had been on it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I think you should go on this. They have this really cool forum called the AMAs. Like, she's like, you know, she's like a cameraman from Survivor actually did one. And she said it was really interesting. And she goes, I don't think there's ever been a Survivor that's done it. And I think people would be really interested to hear some behind the scenes stuff. And this was back when they didn't have the Ponderosa videos. It was all the behind the scenes stuff was all very hush hush. You know, nobody really talked about what happened, like when you're on your way to tribal council or anything like that. So
you had a lot of questions.
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay. And there weren't like podcasts where people can like talk about stuff like that. And so it was very much that it was hard to get a hold of a survivor.
Yeah. When did you start your podcast?
I started it in Heroes versus Villains. So still not for a couple of years after that.
Wow. Okay.
So, well, it was probably, I started before you did your Reddit AMA. So I started the podcast in 2010.
Right.
But a couple of years after you played.
And that was when podcasts were pretty new. Like,
yeah, I mean, that really 2004 is like the year podcasts are invented. But then, you know, people, you know, it used to be hard to figure out how to make a podcast.
Everybody has
now
a podcast.
Now everybody can do it. But once upon a time, it was like there wasn't like an easy way to figure out how to do it. You had to like actually figure something out. OK, let's take a question. This is from Dylan from Australia, who wants to talk about Kellen.
Hi, Robin, BG. Dylan from Australia calling. Love the show. First time caller. Rob, got a bit of a hot take for you here.
Ooh.
Regarding the villain of the season. Bear with me. It's Kellen.
Oh.
Here's why. I think Kellen is starting to come across as very, very condescending, especially with people that she doesn't like. We've seen her being not so flexible with this whole Navidi Strong thing. And I don't know about you, but I'm starting to really, really want to see her have a bit of a hard fall and have this inflexibility come back and bite her in the butt. What are your thoughts? Love to hear from you. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. So Dylan thinks that Kellen could be the villain of the season. Do you subscribe to this or not, PG?
I mean, she's kind of Bradley Light.
Bradley Light.
Yeah, because, well, okay, look, Bradley's been kind of the main villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny because a lot of his, he reminds me a lot of Todd from my season.
Okay.
Who, you know, and I remember like everyone said Todd was kind of a villain and I didn't see it because I was in it and I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of the same, like they're both really big fans of the game. They know it and they've been in control this whole time and they're being just a little too smug and condescending and gleeful about it. We don't want that. We want humbleness.
Yes, from, like Michael.
You know, the people that are in charge. Well, Michael has no choice.
He's the humble underdog.
Yeah. you know, so the thing is, she's
the fan's favorite is the humble underdog.
Yeah, yeah. Followed closely by the bitchy underdog.
Yes, they like that too. They like that too.
You know, I think Kellen and Bradley have been, it's been very obvious that they're very close and they've been playing
very close.
The games together all the time. So, and this is the first time they've been split up, which is why she is suddenly kind of emerging. She's probably had the same the personality or the same attitude as Bradley has. It's just that we haven't seen it as much because she's been overshadowed by him. So now she's starting to kind of get her own edit and she's running her own game. I actually think this is probably good for her that they got split up a little bit.
Yes, but I don't think that the show is intentionally trying to depict her as a villain in any way. I really don't, but I have seen a bit of a backlash. I felt like that this week was a bit of a tipping point for her. And I felt like, you know, we watched the show in Reno, we had a live audience, and you know, I did feel a little bit of in the room as a group. There was a little bit of a slightly audible groan when we got into.
To me, your gut is the perfect mix of your head and your heart.
And we got into that, and there's been a lot of threads on social media about this that people felt like this was maybe too cute.
Is the gut really a mix of the head and the heart anyway? Like, I don't even know.
What do you think? Are you a head person or a heart person, PG?
Ah, shit. Maybe I am a gut person.
Gut person.
You know, I think at the end of the day,
you know who else was a gut person? Going back a couple of seasons.
And right now, my gut tells me, go use the bathroom.
Yes, Darnell was a gut person also.
It's because we're full of shit.
Yes. Yes. So she it is Kellen, perhaps, and this is something that I think is a interesting psychological discussion. Is she too perfect? Has she become, to the viewer, do people find her now? Is she unrelatable because she's too perfect? She has the perfect answer for everything. Was that a little too teacher's pet even?
Yeah. I mean, he especially when Probst is like, I want just short, quick answer. Just, you know, head or heart. And she's like, let me exposition on this. Let me write you an essay and like get the Zen music out. And, you know.
Yes. Call on me, Jeff. I have an answer. I'd like to pontificate on this. So, yes, I don't think that they're trying to make her look bad, but I do think that there is a little bit of people don't like it. It was a little bit kiss ass.
It was a little bit kiss ass. And it was also like, again, I think it's hard for us to constantly see the same people be smug about being in control. It's kind of like, they're like these like 80s high school movie villains almost, where they're not really bad. They're just kind of spoiled and used to getting their way. And maybe they'll pout a little bit if they don't
people
have their way.
People that watch, they don't like the status quo.
No.
They get tired of seeing, okay, Navidi deciding who's going to go home every single week. And then these likable, the people that they're rooting for goes home every week.
Yeah.
And they have to blame somebody.
Well, and also, she hasn't been that good at really giving them the hope. Like, you know, like, well, you know, yeah, maybe we can work with you because you don't know what's going to happen down the future.
Yeah,
still.
Should you give people the hope?
Of course,
because
you
then
should.
They resent you when they walk out.
No, well, like I told you, I think I've talked about this before, but like on my first season, Todd came up to me after the merge and he goes, hey, Peach, look, he's like, you know that I have my alliance and I'm strong with them. He's like, but he goes, I really, really like you. I really respect you as a player, what you've done so far. He's like, I will help you get as far as I can until like, I can't anymore because of my alliance. And I actually kind of respected that he said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I think that's a really good move because you want to give people hope. If people think that they might, that you're kind of open to working with
Stephanie
them.
Stephanie Johnson wrote it in the sand.
Yeah. You have to give them hope that you're open to working with them because then they won't want to actively work against you as much.
Okay. Kellen has made a lot of analogies this season, and she had one that I thought might have been a little off this week heading to Tribal Council. I'd love to get your take on this as somebody who knows so much about, you know, you are into jewelry and art. So tell me if what you think about this.
But tonight is going to tell us if Navini have finally broken down, whether it's still about orange and purple or if everything's just turned brown.
Okay, we're going to find out tonight if it's all about orange and purple or if things turn brown. Is this A, is brown the color you get when purple and orange get mixed together? Is that what she's trying to say?
It is. It all turns to shit.
No. B, yes, is she trying to tell us that she is a gut
and
player?
Right now, my gut tells me, go use the bathroom.
What was she trying to say there?
She was speaking from the gut, clearly.
That's what she was saying.
I don't think she was ever in doubt of how the vote was going to go. I mean,
okay. So you feel like that she was implying when she talks about brown, she's talking about excrement.
No.
She was talking about some pairing of James and Angela that he is the orange, she is the purple coming together to make brown against her. So what is she trying to, I don't know what, I'm just trying to follow the analogy, what she's saying.
Well, you know, the whole tribe is going to, she doesn't want the tribe to turn brown.
Okay, doesn't want her plans to turn brown. Okay, PG, we were talking before we came on the podcast, and you were talking about how you wanted to discuss the psychology of human happiness on the podcast today. We didn't even get into that.
It was, well, I was telling Rob that I had been listening to this podcast, and they were talking about...
Which podcast? You don't remember?
I don't remember.
Okay.
it was Pick the Brain or something?
Pick the Brain.
I think. Basically, they play, like, they'll play TED Talks.
TED Talks.
And then they'll kind of analyze and talk about it afterwards. So this was about, like, the source of happiness, and it was... So they were talking about, most people think that happiness comes from having a choice,
mm-hmm.
right? The freedom of choice,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, oh, I got what I wanted and that makes me happy. And he said that, so synthesized happiness is the happiness we feel when we just have to accept a situation that we have no choice in,
mm-hmm.
you know? So the example you gave was, would you rather be a lottery winner or a paraplegic? It was a no-brainer, right?
Yes, yeah.
And he goes, believe it or not, like, I don't know, like 60% of paraplegics are they're 60% happier than lottery winners a year after the event happens.
Yes. Why? Because it was like, boy, I almost died. And yeah. It's like, yeah.
Then and they learn to accept their lot in life and they appreciate everything more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas if you have a choice, you're constantly second guessing yourself. You're wondering if you did the right thing. You're wondering if you made the right decisions. And maybe what I chose isn't what I would have been the most happy with. Maybe that other choice would have been better,
mm-hmm.
you know? Whereas like, if you're only stuck with the one option, you're like, you make your peace with it.
Yeah. I experience this every single time I go to watch Netflix, when it's like, there's a million things. I'm like, I can't, there's nothing here that I can pick. Whereas when like people like, were, you know, when we were, you know, really little and we had like, you know, 8 channels and then you watch something, not because you liked it, because that's what was on.
Yeah.
You didn't have, it's like, hey. Don't blame me. I didn't pick the wrong thing. There's just nothing on, where now we live in a world of infinite choices. There is the perfect thing is out there. You just can't find it. That's on you, PG.
Yeah. Well, you learn to just be happy with what you're
right.
given.
You have these apps. You could be dating anybody. But then when you used to live in a town and it's like, why'd you marry this person? It's like, cause that was the person I knew. That's
yeah.
it. Yeah. You didn't blow it. That was all you had.
You know, and I feel like say like my first stint in China, where I literally had no option. Like I felt like I did everything I could already. I only had one avenue because mm-hmm. I was already always on the losing end. I didn't have the luxury of choosing, well, should I go with this group or this group?
Yes.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I only have one choice.
Was that easier to process because it was like, there was like, what can I do?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You come out of the game feeling, you know what, like you were in a bad position. That's luck. Mm-hmm. But you did everything you could and you did the best you could. And I feel very happy with it. You know, it's worse in Cambodia where I'm like, oh, man, I actually the very first vote, like I should have voted out. I think this over and over again. I should have voted Abby Marie out, you know, instead of Venus, like mm-hmm. on second chances. Right. Like that was absolutely my call to make, because Jeff came up to me. We were the two swing votes. He was mm-hmm. like, which way do you want to go? Right. You know, and you second guess it every day of your life and you're unhappy about it. So, yeah. You know, I feel like somebody.
Is that what they're saying? You're unhappy every day, PG, because you think about that vote?
Every day that I think about not voting Abby Marie out first, it
yeah.
okay. brings me to tears.
Well,
get over it. Debbie Downer.
But do you really, you spend a lot of time thinking about what would have happened differently in Cambodia if you would have made that different move?
No, not that I spend a lot of time about it, but when I think about it. When I think back to that season that I played, mm-hmm. you go back through all the, you know, mistakes or choices, you know, and the thing is when you're kind of in control, it's actually worse.
Yeah.
Because you have that power and that choice and you don't know if you've made the right one. When you don't have the choice, it's a lot easier.
But what would have changed? Because like, let's say hypothetically, okay. You voted out Abby Maria, and then because then she turned on you when you went to the swap tribe, you still could have gotten to a bad swap.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have had anyone that was really gunning for me specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And who's such a loose cannon too, right? Like,
right.
And you build the inroads with, like I would have built the inroads with like Wigglesworth and Wu and whoever. Yeah. Like,
but that was, I think that maybe you might be just be like, I know that's what happened, but I feel like you're being a little results oriented with that because it just so happened that you ended up at, you know, you didn't know it was going to go down to three tribes. You didn't know that you'd be stuck with Abby Maria and that you'd be in a situation where, you know, that she would be wanting to flip and you'd be in, down in the numbers. Like there was like a lot of things that had to go wrong then after that.
No, but I knew that she was a bad person to keep in the game.
Yeah.
Like from day one, like I
knew. So what was the ultimate reason that you feel like that Jeff talked you into it, or you felt like that it was that you could have patched things up with her? What was the ultimate reason that caused you to then decide to save Abby?
It's because Shereen and Spencer offered me a spot in the Alliance and the other group didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The other group, in fact, came up to me. Gosh, I'm blanking on his name right now.
Who?
Dietz.
Terry.
Terry. Terry came up to me and was like, hey, you know, just so you know, the vote tonight is Abby Maria. We don't need your vote,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just telling you so you're not on the outside of the numbers.
Okay.
It was so condescending and it was so clear that if I voted with them, I would be on the bottom of that group.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other group were like, yeah, we want you to be part of our tight four. Like we're the inner right. core alliance. So that's why, you know, and of course, like at the time, that is going to be the right decision. If someone offers you an alliance and the other team doesn't, you're going to vote with the people that do, even though the one that they want to keep is the one you wanted out. It's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't think you should spend a lot of time thinking about this, PG. You did the best you could, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's all you can do, right?
Yeah. I don't like to hear when people say they have a regret in the game, or you know, I should have gone this way, because you don't know. There's so many different things, and especially in a situation like this where it's like I feel like that when you get to the end of the game and it's like, oh, if I would have opened this door, I would have won. If I opened this door, I would have lost. Why did I open that door? You know, they were still going to swap the tribes again after that. You're down in the numbers. You're on the wrong tribe to begin with, where you know that it ends up being, you know, I mean, Spencer got into the final three, but you had an uphill battle.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's worse choices and decisions out there. Like I talked to Wu, and Wu tells me he still thinks about like how he should have taken Cass instead of Tony
yeah.
to the end, and they would have won. Like it's so tough, man. Yeah. These decisions, like,
yeah. What are you gonna do? All right. Anything else on the secret to human happiness?
No, I think that's, we're good. We've covered everything.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that we should all get rid of our Netflix and Hulu and CBS All Access, and then just watch, get a like over the air antenna, and then whatever's on is on. Don't DVR anything. And that's it.
just accept your lot in life and actually, like, you know, like someone like Bradley, not Bradley, like Michael, who's in this bad position, actually should be really grateful for it, because I think he will be happier in the end because of it.
Why do you say he's in a bad position?
Well, he's been the underdog this whole time.
Bradley?
Not Bradley. I'm sorry. Michael. I meant Michael.
Michael.
I prefer like being the underdog.
Sure. All the time. Sure. Yes. But yeah, if you can be the underdog and then turn it around, that's the best.
It's a lot easier in some ways because you don't have to make any decisions. You only have one path, one way to go.
That's right. Your back is against the wall. What are you going to do? You got to go all out. You know, there's no turning back. It's easier.
I prefer that to being in control. I mean, it feels good to be in control. But then, like, I go nuts trying to decide, like, where's the best road. You have too many choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, as I get older, I want fewer choices.
No, it's the idea of sort of like, you know, if you burn the boats behind you, you know, you can't really hedge your bets in terms of like, oh, I guess we could go back. We could retreat. There's only, you know, one way out of it alive.
Yeah. And that's a good point, too, because this is what I see someone like Bradley doing, where, like, I forget, there was a scene where someone, I think it was Stephanie, was talking to him, and she was like, I just want to be saved. And he's like, well, I got nothing for you. He's mm-hmm. like, I can't help you. He's not, you know what I mean? And yeah, she went home, but she might not have, you know what I mean? And he's not making really that many bridges.
He's like,
with
come
people
on, it's 5'4". Yeah. What do you want?
He's not making friends with anyone outside of his alliance. Whereas somebody who's an underdog, like Michael's appealing to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So now at the end of the day, he's got relationships with anyone because he's had to try like harder with everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about what's going on in the world of Survivor social media.
Tweets, baby tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than things that might not be beneficiary tweets.
Yes, okay. thank you, Trisha, for that. And so we are allowing people, you know, Ryan Elder, that of the Snakes, Rats, and Goats podcast. That's why I heard you last season. I said, you know, we got to get PG back on.
Yeah.
And that he wrote the original music and his legacy still carries on. You can download the music to record your own Survivor Tweets jingle. Go to robhaswebsite.com/Survivor Tweets for that and then send them into the show. Okay. So let's talk about what's going on in Survivor social media. Now, did you see this week that Dalton Ross released the top 35 rankings for all of the Survivor seasons, PG?
I did.
Yes. Okay. And were you very impressed where your Survivor China ended up on the list?
I retweeted actually both of my seasons, top 10.
Whoa. Okay.
I think it was like five and eight.
Mm-hmm.
Respectively.
Yeah. 5 and 8. Very good, right?
Not a coincidence that both seasons, you know, I was on.
Yes. So you take a lot of pride in being in two of the top 10 most entertaining seasons.
Well, I can't really take much credit for Cambodia.
Look, you can take some credit. So
nobody cares about the pre-merge.
Yeah, I have no idea. I didn't even look to see where Survivor All-Stars was. But yeah, the number 5 season of all time.
It's one of those good middle school seasons, I think. Mm-hmm. There's some strategy. There's a great cast, I think. We had some really entertaining characters. Golden era.
Yes.
Golden era, I would say.
Okay. Well, there was some controversy among the Survivor winners where Kim Spradlin tweeted out, "At least I beat at Boston Rob. That makes me feel slightly better."
I would be interested to see how the two of them do if they play together on the same season.
If they play together, do you think they could coexist?
Well, I don't know. One would implode. Like, it did take Boston Rob 4 tries to win.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they would work well together. I don't know if she fits into the mold of, you know, what he's looking for in a partner.
No, she's no Natalie Tenner.
She's not Natalie Tenorelli, with all due respect to Nat 10.
Yes.
Yes. And then Boston Rob responded and said, "Looks like Dalton Ross has been polling his 6 cats that live in his basement again, LOL." Taking a shot at Dalton Ross. Just to give the top 5 baby, if anybody is interested, and you should check out Dalton Ross on Twitter, Heroes versus Villains was number 1. You agree? Okay, you haven't seen Heroes versus Villains.
I didn't even see the rest of Cambodia.
Yes. Number two was Micronesia with fans versus favorites one. Did you see that one? That was right after your first season. You saw some of it. The first half or the second half?
I don't know, bits and pieces here and there. I travel so much for work, it's hard to keep up sometimes.
Okay. I will say that the, not to shade EW.com, but the slideshow seems to break for me a number of times. I know that I think it was then there was Kagyan and
Pearl Islands
were, I think, 3 and 4, and then China was 5. So,
yeah.
Well, you have to take my word for it because the slideshow is not working on this computer either. Okay. Some other survivors after this week. How about this? Morgan Rickey. Do you remember her from this season?
Third out?
Yes, you're right. She tweeted, karma, # love you, James, # never trust the blondes. I don't know. I would let the never trust the blondes go. I think let's not keep trying to make that happen. That has nothing to do with what happened this week.
You know,
we can drop that.
Yeah. No, there's no. I mean,
karma.
The karma is that he got voted out also, but not he wasn't betrayed by his own tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not really.
Yes. Now that they did, I will say that they did try to vote out Angela that night. I mean, it's a similar situation to what you're talking about with Abby Maria, where James had the chance to put Angela on the chopping block and he could have taken her out of the game that night, and he decided to do something else. Angela stays in the game. She didn't have a vendetta against him. She should have, if anything, been more gracious to him. And then she is part of the reason why he goes home.
Yeah, he should have worked her a little bit harder that night that they saved her. Been like,
but they didn't
like,
vote together then. That's true. Stephen will talk about that a lot, how you're not really allies until you vote together.
That's true. It's more like we wanted her gone more than we wanted you gone. It's mm-hmm. not so much I wanted to work with you.
Yes, but if they could have voted together once, I think that things might have been different for James. It's not. It's more action, less talk.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
yeah. Okay. This is from Sunday Berquist, who tweeted, at James Lim says, sad to see you go, but you have amazing posture, which is impressive on those awful stumps.
As I adjust a little more now.
Yes. So good on James Lim. A lot of people commented on James's amazing posture.
I think it's all those muscles just naturally like pull him like just into the place. I wouldn't know. So
yeah, no, it's hard. It's hard to not like slouch over. I do that a lot.
Well, when you have this overdeveloped back like he does, it pulls you straight.
Yes. It's difficult for me. And I feel like I have it under control, and then I'll see a video and then it'll be not that good. I find that I'm like E.T. where I'm like talking to somebody, and even if my body will be back here, I find myself like my head is just like moves closer to the person I'm talking to. Yes. It's weird. Okay. This is interesting. Figgy came out, shots fired against Angela. She says, Angela is not strong enough to win this game. I repeat, Angela is not, all caps, strong enough to win this game. # survivor goes on. What does Figgy have against Angela?
Oh, she's really coming for her.
Coming for Angela. Why?
Maybe she means emotionally.
I don't know.
Right? It must be emotionally. I mean, she was in the army, so she must be pretty tough.
Yeah, she seems pretty tough. If anything, you would say Angela seems like she's really tough. Like, does she have, like, the personality to win this game? Figgy is coming for her toughness wig.
I mean, you know what? When you get backstabbed mm-hmm. by your own tribe,
yeah.
That especially when she was like, you know what? I am gung-ho Navidi mm-hmm. all the way. Like, she was bleeding purple or whatever. And mm-hmm. then to get backstabbed, you know, I mean, that's got to be really rough. And you don't actually get, and then you don't even get voted out. You're still around.
Mm-hmm.
I am surprised that she's not more like, well, I want, like, revenge against them. Or now I'm totally against this whole group. And obviously, I can't trust anyone. Like, so I think she does seem a little bit wishy-washy in that way. Like, I would have maybe, like, been like, hey, like, embrace some new alliances and build some new inroads.
Yeah. Hannah Shapiro says, Jeff Probst says, choose answer A or B. Kellen, answer C, bitches. That's right. like sea bass.
D, all of the above.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So real quick. Are you a head person or are you a heart person?
Now let me pull up my thesaurus.
Yes. Yeah. Ashley Nolan tweeted out, showing up to a challenge just to drop your buff and leave is like going to play with your friends at a playground, but there's no swings or slides, and you're told to leave immediately with strange new friends who smell funny and complain too much. What do you think of that analogy? Is that better or worse than purple and orange make brown?
It's a lot. It's I like that one better, but it's more like if you had to go home with like a new set of parents, it's like wife swap or something.
Whoa. Well, so I think that we'll say
it's a lot.
Yeah. Then Tyler Fredrickson, who was on the voicemail a couple of weeks ago, he tweeted out, he had a couple of things to say, that he tweeted out one thing about Bradley. He said, slumma. And this was a reference to this quote about the Bradley describing the Malolo camp.
Coming back to the Navidi Beach is like going to a resort after you've been in a slum.
He also had this quote from the episode talking about what it was like to live in at Malolo.
Come on, guys.
You wouldn't even believe the squalor.
Ride, huh? Squalor.
You wouldn't even believe the squalor. The slum.
I think it was maybe Figgy that had tweeted something about, she's like, I'm glad to see that he's done with giving Yelp reviews of all the beaches.
This is a complete squalor.
2.5 stars.
Yeah. Also, Tyler Fredrickson said, I've never seen more shells and necklaces and beaded hair ties. Has everyone made a fake immunity idol?
Right? Like, do they think they are? Do they think they're Andrew Savage? Like, with their little necklaces?
Yes. Yes. And then Tyler also said, Chelsea not even waiting for Ghost Island to start crying over coffee, reminding her of home. We'll see you there soon enough, girl.
I mean, it's, what day are they on now? Are they
15?
At
15? It was 15 to start the episode.
15 is too soon to be crying over food and missing it and all of that.
Yes.
I mean, and they've had
so much crying.
They've had a lot of good rewards too. Like, I feel like they've had a lot of good food rewards.
Mm-hmm. It's so weird that we've seen two people this season crying over coffee. It reminds me of
pastries. I mean, but they've had some good, they've like in China. You know what our food reward was? Chinese food. We didn't have peanut butter and jelly.
Not even that. It was Chinese food, and they had somebody like come and make it. It wasn't even like it was like with stuff that like they caught, right?
Yeah, it wasn't like a pizza. It was like, here's more of the same fish you've been eating like this whole time. And honestly, the only one who's going to think of it and think who's going to eat Chinese food and think of home is me, and I didn't even get to eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right, PG. That Survivor goes on. What else is going on? Everything else is good in your world?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've got the jewelry business is going well. I guess I should give a shout out. So I have these necklaces from China that are on sale on my website. Mm-hmm. If you guys are interested in kind of a cool Survivor like memorabilia, it's the exact same necklace we were given on China. So I have replicas of that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are on sale on my website.
What's the website?
It's I get really cheap and I just tacked it onto my jewelry website.
Okay.
I didn't want to pay for a new website.
So tell me where to go.
It's lowraderjewelry.com. So that's LORADOR jewelry. I can never spell jewelry. JEWELRY.com.
Sure. Or if worse comes to worse, message or write to PG on Twitter and you'll get a hold of people. You tell them where the right way to go.
The link's on my Twitter and on my Instagram.
Yes.
Which is at PG, PEIHGE. That's a good thing about having a unique name.
Yes, you have your very, it's not PEIH __
69 or what?
No. Like Farm Guy 69? Yeah. Okay. So, and then you're getting ready. You're going to, you're moving.
I'm moving to my new condo. We're going to paint it. Like, I've never done this before. This might be the worst. This might be the worst decision of my life so far. So I don't know. Painting like a 3-bedroom condo.
Okay. So this is very, very exciting. It was so nice to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
Yes. And I had so many questions to run by you that we recorded video for this. And I was showing PG my setup here. And she's saying that she knows what to do to get us set up on Twitch. She says that we could be mining cryptocurrency with this computer in here. So PG has it all figured out.
I'm going to be Rob's new business manager.
Yeah, this is so exciting. This is the this is the best news I've had. So very excited about this. And PG was so impressed with the RHAP buffs that we have here. But now I feel stupid because we made them orange. And that's unlucky, the orange buffs.
Well, at least it's not yellow. Yes. Yellow has been my downfall.
Yes. Oh, when you wear a yellow buff.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm okay with the orange.
I think traditionally orange has been the unluckiest buff.
Not for me.
Okay. So, all right. So not for PG. Okay. So we still have a lot coming up here. We have got the Wiggle Room, Josh Wiggler, who is a big PG Law fan. A lot of people were calling in. They wanted you to review the Wiggler's Wombat's hat.
What is that?
Well, we'll show you. We'll show you. If you wanted to, did Josh Wiggler give you a Wiggler's Wombat's hat? I just don't have one here to show you.
A wombat hat.
Yes. Would you be, that's not something you'd be interested in.
Yes.
A Wiggler's Wombat hat. Okay. Well, you haven't seen it yet, but when you see it, then we can get your opinion on it. Okay. So
is it like the sorting hat? Like, does it tell you if you're like chaotic good or like what does it do?
Kind of. So we've got the Wiggle Room coming up on Sunday. So, and you don't even know the wand off from anything, right?
No, what
okay. So that's our big song parody contest.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, okay. So I'll play some wand offs for you before you get out of here today. So be sure to check that out. And of course, that I will be back live with Stephen Fishback after this week's episode coming up on Wednesday night after our week off in Reno. The video and the podcast from Reno, that's all up on robisawebsite.com. And of course, if you want even more Rob is a Podcast, you can become a patron. PG saw all the Patreon perks.
You get a mug.
This you don't get mug? A mug. You got a mug because you came here and said you want coffee. That's not not currently one of the rewards.
You get
mugs. Mugs be heavy, PG.
You get bells.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can check out the levels. Go to robiswebsite.com/patron for more information on all that.
I saw a box, this Costco sized box of bells in his living room, and I thought he was just going through so many bells that he had to keep a supply.
Yes, I'm going through like a midlife crisis with the bells. Okay. All right, PG, thank you so much. And of course, thank you guys for listening to the show. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.